Do you feel that way?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Well, it's interesting because, yeah, I feel that way, and I've been taught. I mean, as a union leader, you get held to a standard, and I've been clearly taught. You buy everything union. You look for the American-made label, and things I never thought of. And the AFL helps you see that. So, you know, for instance, one time we went to an AFL convention, and they had all this Angel Soft toilet paper, and we found that they're unionized. And you know, and then UFCW represents some places that make alcohol. And things I just didn't think of. And I go to See's Candy all the time because they're unionized. And they give free chocolate.
Is that the only reason?
No, they give out free samples. But I always buy something. I always buy something there because I really want to support unionization. And how could you not go to free chocolate? It's a given.
Well, I know that having been on at OFNHP rallies, that a big piece of the community benefit is putting patients first, that patients before profits, and that things like, say, staffing totally benefit patient care. And nurses and healthcare professionals are folks that are in the work because they want to do good. They want to be good for the community.
Yeah.
They want to heal patients. They want to heal folks. And clearly, improving working conditions and benefits for healthcare workers benefits the community directly because their working conditions are the patient's healing conditions.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we say that all the time. And, you know, so that's the other thing, you know, for postal workers, there's definitely an element of improved work ethic, but also, like, you hold them accountable to actually getting us our mail. And you hold them accountable to a certain amount of quality, that employers, even government, whatever, does not really hold themselves to, the way I think that employees do. Because we have a certain amount of pride and professional, pride with our work. And so we're always, you know, just like right now, you can see the outcome of putting profits before patients for so long, right? The PPE crisis, is an element of that. And, you know, because they adjust their supply chain to keep their inventory to a certain level to keep the money not in your supply chain. They rely on the government stockpile when maybe they should have had more on their own. The lean staffing model that they've used for so long that we've been calling out, well, now they're worried about how they're going to staff these places with healthcare providers. So, it's interesting, so for sure.
Yeah. If only they'd listen to the employees, right?
Yeah. I mean, not that we're 100% right, but it seems like when I'm sitting in meetings and they're telling me the next thing that they're going to do, and I'm like, well, that's not a good idea. And I'm not even in the lab, and I know that's not a good idea, but I've hung out with enough people in the lab that I know it's not a good idea. And then I go get people from the lab, and they're like, nope, that's a really bad idea. You get them in front of management, and you say, look, these lab workers are telling you that's a bad idea, or these respiratory therapists, or these home health, you know, nurses, or these social workers, you know, because you understand your profession and you understand a different way in operations how something's actually going to work. And that's not always what is going to happen, you know. I mean, that's not something that is always apparent to someone who doesn't do the job.
Exactly. And I think that they, you know, being in a union, regardless of OFNHP or UFCW or the letter carrier, it gives you so much more power to be able to speak to your employer about these conditions. You may not necessarily have the power that OFNHP has with their national contract, but it certainly gives you a foot up over the rest of the community.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, so, you know, and also we have AFT behind us, and, you know, when you have the big internationals as part of your union, that really does help. You know, we have Randy Weingarten, and she has a lot of relationships. We have huge pensions that are funded, and that, you know, puts pressure on corporate America in ways. So there's a lot of different ways that you can leverage that power.
Well, we've run out of time. We'll have to wrap up. This is Labor Radio on KBOO. You've been listening to Adrian Enghaus, the president of Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals. Thanks to my co-host Amanda, Jamie, and thanks to our engineer. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Radio's greatest application is in broadcasting mass entertainment. Probably one of the best ways to get started is to make it a hobby and build an amateur station. It will show you more quickly than anything else whether or not you can succeed in radio.
KBOO, Portland.
Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. This evening, we are here with Rushni Takor. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. We experienced some amazing program that you helped put together a month or two ago. Can you talk about that program?
Sure. It's called the CRCI Comedy School. And we started it in January of 2018. I moved to Portland from New York City for the PSU Art and Social Practice program at, it's an MFA program. And Harold Fletcher was doing work with the few students already teaching an art class there. And they were doing a bunch of talent shows, and there was one of the artists inside, he also was interested in stand-up comedy. And so for a talent show, he did a stand-up set. And so Harold and some of the students got together and asked if there was more interest in the in comedy class at CRCI, and there was. And so we started the class, and we have about 20 to 25 incarcerated comedians in the class. And we've been doing it weekly for over a year now.
Mm-hmm. And CRCI stands for?
Oh, Columbia River Correctional Institution. And it's in North Portland. It's a minimum security men's prison.
Mm-hmm. And how does the program work exactly? How is it set up?
So we have a few grad students, and we come in as volunteers on every Monday evening. And so none of us are comedians or like have done really comedy, and Portland has this amazing comedy scene. And mm-hmm. so we've been getting a lot of local comedians to come in and lead workshops. And so we've had Milan Patel, Marcus Coleman, Shane Braden, Kate Murphy, Katie Nguyen, all of these consistent local comedians come in. And they would perform for the guys on the inside. And so they were exposed to different kinds of work. And then they would write their own work and just perform and would get feedback from the local comedians. And so we would work on the class together, working on material. And we started with just stand-up, and then we started doing sketch comedy too. And then now we just finished our, I think, fourth show that we have inside the prison, and that's for friends and family, and then outside guests. And then we just did an outside event. We've done so many events. We've done an outside event at Critical Resistance.
Lot, yeah.
Last month, and that was a pretty good. And that actually, we had people that were on the inside that were released, that they practiced their stand-up comedy on the mm-hmm. outside, too. So, yeah.
And people can find out more about this online. Is there a link for it? Or
yes. We have a website, and it's crci.art. It's a whole structure of programming that we're doing inside CRCI, and so this is one of the projects that we're doing on the inside.
Mm-hmm. So, to backtrack, what's your general background and how did you get involved with all this?
So I'm not a comedian, but so yeah, I moved here from New York City. I'm an artist. I did a lot of I did painting, drawing, sculpture, mm-hmm. installation, and then I started doing work in the communities. And then I moved to Portland, and on my flight to Portland, I got to PDX, and I was like, okay, I'm moving here, and Hari Kondabolu was on my flight, and so so I saw him at PDX, and I was like, oh, this is a good sign. And he said that he was visiting Portland, trying out some new material, and so I went to my first comedy show mm-hmm. in Portland that week, my first week in Portland. And I realized, oh my God, these comedians are pretty funny. There's all of these local comedians that have really good shows and really good places. And so I just started. And also I moved to Portland, and coming from New York City, everybody falls asleep at 9 p.m. I didn't know where to
right.
go.
And
so yep. I was at least there's shows yep. at 11 or something. And so I started just going to a bunch mm-hmm. of comedy shows. And then I never thought I would write anything or even get up on the mic or anything, but being in the class and just seeing all of these guys that have never done it and then see mm-hmm. them improve and actually work together and create really interesting, complex jokes, I was like, okay, I want to try it too. So mm-hmm. I did it last month, and I kind of want to keep on doing it.
Mm-hmm. And part of it came through this connection with Portland State University.
Yes, and so
program.
I'm a student at in this program, MFA program. It is very tiny. We have 5 people per year, mm-hmm. And we have it's 15 total, and a bunch of different artists doing so many different things. A lot of personal, interesting work throughout Portland. And this was just an opportunity to plug into something that was already happening and totally shape it and develop it mm-hmm. Collaboratively, which has been pretty amazing.
And what are what's the future for the program? I mean, as far as the this whole arts program that's going on, because it sounds like there's comedy, there's visual arts, there's...
So since it's been happening, I guess, since 2016... and it started, so the other art program that we have, it's an artist residency, so the guys on the inside, it's framed that they're artists in residence, and so they're actually having a show at Outer Space Gallery later this year, curated by the guys on the inside. Mm-hmm. We have the Comedy School Project, that is a second big thing that came up through the class, and then... Some other grad students have done other kind of special projects. One is by Anka Schutler. She did a project called Answers Without Words. It was a photography project, and I got to collaborate with her on that. And then we're thinking of doing, or there's talk, and I'm not sure if it's going to happen, probably in the future, later this year, of doing a variety show where there's all these TVs and there's a channel inside the prison, and so creating content for that. Whether it be comedy or just kind of interviews or something, some of those kinds of things too.
Right. So it sounds like you're enjoying what you do.
I kind of love it. Yeah.
You love it. So there's some fun involved.
Yeah. Yes.
And, I bring it up because, again, when generally, we talked about this when people are telling people they go inside to prisons to do various work. Right. For a lot of people on the outside, I mean, especially if they're not either formally incarcerated and or a friend and family member of somebody who is incarcerated or is incarcerated, there's this idea that everything is just bleak inside.
Right.
And so it sounds like, at least every once in a while, there's some rays of sunshine that come through and that people make connections and people are making art and being creative. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So my first experience at CRCI was by visiting a talent show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time I had set foot in a prison in Portland. And it's a very intense experience to walk through the gates and to be watched and know that you're being watched and seeing just he have all these ideas of what prison is. But then, like, when actually being in a big like the chow hall, the cafeteria, and then like getting the vibe of everybody and how, like, and there's so much talent going on inside too. And so that was just like kind of the shift for me of just like that this was just defying all of the expectations. And so just still going consistently over this past year and working on material, working on like crafting content, and also having like really difficult discussions and like opening up space for all of these like complexities, like that's been pretty amazing. And then even after like when we had the outside event and we had like a panel discussion with the formerly incarcerated individuals doing the comedy now, and them talking about like how that was very valuable in terms of what they got out of the class on top of just like getting of the comedy aspect too. So it's I mean, it's comedy too, you just like, it's, there's a lot of laughs, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's gonna be inevitable. Hopefully, I mean, people are telling some good jokes.
Yeah, and even, you know, and making jokes funnier. So, and like, there've been some like pretty spontaneous and amazing moments that like that kind of like over time have just like come out, which, and that's the like stuff that I couldn't believe and just like was kind of amazed that happened. So
right. And again, kind of when it comes to like misconceptions, again, this is very cliche, but you know, when people bring up things like, oh, people inside are, you know, I don't, you know, they're watching cable and this is my tax money, right, or whatever, these kind of things, right? And contrary, there are these kind of programs going on, you know, at different places too. And also that a lot of these things, and I believe with what you do, I mean, these are things that the facilities are not necessarily paying for. They might be supporting it, but actually paying for. So when people talk about, oh, tax dollars, this and that for prisoners, it's like largely that's not the case, right? So how does that work with your program then?
So yeah, we're all volunteers, and there's no credit for the classes or anything. It's all just like we go when we can, and those who go consistently, like working in the prison, we do sign up for the volunteer badge. And we do have really great allies on the inside who are open enough to do kind of innovative programming. James Hanley, who is in charge of the programming at CRCI, has worked and has like worked with us and like let us experiment in such great ways. So it's been amazing to have the support on the inside too for us to like really push and really see what's possible in terms of ownership and what's allowed.
Can you talk about kind of being a volunteer, what that's like and how the process kind of went down?
Sure. So it was actually like a few months before I was able to become a volunteer, but it's quite just going in and having this experience. I was always like very clear of like, oh, I get to leave, right? And so like being very intentional and thoughtful of the time that of being in this space and like having the conversations and having the stuff that happens in the 2 hours on a Monday evening, just making sure that that's kind of as substantive as possible, and how like just going consistently and developing these like interesting relationships and talking about comedy and also talking about art and like really that practice and developing that practice as well.
How's the group facilitated?
So we, at the beginning, we had like the local comedians come in, and so it was kind of like collaboratively facilitated, and at this point, more and more of the classmates that have been coming consistently, they're like taking more of the lead and like, mm-hmm. Especially with feedback and everything for everybody's content. So mm-hmm. that's been kind of like a dream too. So that like, after some time, like feeling ownership of the class too. So,
mm-hmm. so kind of like a rotating facilitator in a way that everybody
and
gets the same skills.
It's also very casual. And so like one, well, if people want to work on stand-up material, like we'll rotate MCs mm-hmm. of like who wants to practice their MC skills and like,
right.
Yeah. So, we do a lot of rotation so that everybody has, and then, you can tell like what people, their strengths, like some are really great at giving feedback and being the lead, and some folks are, excellent collaborators and like helping other people develop mm-hmm. work too. So, those kinds of strengths and weaknesses kind of balance each other out through the group. So that's pretty nice too.
Right. So there's kind of, sounds like people are, it's not just comedy. I mean, it's developing social skills and critical thinking skills and
totally.
There's a lot to writing comedy.
Yeah. And, there's like public speaking and all these things in just performing. But then there's also like, when working together and shaping something together, how to work together. And then we've also, everybody, we co-produce these shows. And so people take ownership in terms of like, who's going to work on the organization of it. Who's we had one person, Rhino, who joined the class pretty late. Like if we have room, people can mm-hmm. join the class. And he didn't do stand up or wasn't ready to perform, but he's like a muralist and we were thinking about doing a backdrop, and so he just like jumped in and like did a backdrop mm-hmm. For the last show, which was like very well received by the classmates and everything. So just like having little points of entry for people who might not want to get on the mic, but like how they participate too.
Right. Maybe they get a little warmed up after a while.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So for folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland, and we're here with Rushni Takor talking about a cultural arts and comedy program that happens in the Portland area at CRCI, Columbia River Correctional Institute. And what I was going to ask you about the comedy that happens there that's very interesting to me is how not all of it, but a lot of it is about being inside. And whether it's about being inside or how that relates to maybe, you know, life outside as you're inside. Mm-hmm. And I might even say that, and I'm wondering what you think about it, is almost seems like one of the best ways somebody could, I mean, aside from visiting a prison, doing the work, but to learn about what it's like inside is almost to hear these comedy bits, because they're funny, but they're also so anecdotal about right. life inside.
Yeah, for sure. And that was the bulk, because this is a very specific context, right? And mm-hmm. so the school, the project itself is like trying to shape and like create an alternative culture inside mm-hmm. this specific context, which is like black and white thinking, yes or no, you know, just very like,
yeah.
And so taking personal experience, I mean, that's what comedians do. They take like their personal experiences and then yeah. like transform them. And so this is a very unique perspective in a very specific context, and to like use humor as a way to share that story. It has been super, it's amazing like how much creativity has been involved in crafting all of this mm-hmm. this on everybody's material as well. So yeah, there. I mean, and we encourage them, like, if they're on, when they get on the outside, to like, nobody's gonna have that experience that you just had. Like, you're please keep on doing it.
Right.
On the Absolutely. Outside.
Yeah.
And we've been able to create, start building our community on the outside too, with an outside program, so that, the local comedians that have come in, like, suggest like open mics and things like that. So, yeah, try to have some of that continuation too.
Mm-hmm. What kind of feedback do you get in general from these incarcerated comedians, or as you said, some of them are out now too. And what's the general, you know, kind of feedback about doing the work? I mean, whatever comes up for people
when they're in the class and when they're out.
Mm-hmm.
They've been very appreciative, and they've really enjoyed it. I think, like, some of them never thought they would get on the mic before,
mm-hmm.
which has been, like, really nice, because they have, so many of them have gotten on the mic. And also, just being able to have that experience of just, like, meeting local comedians, and then also being able to share their stories in that mm-hmm. perspective, in that format too, and like to get people to laugh, like as a job, and like on your mic, on the mic, that's like such a hard thing. And so when like they do that, and they like perform in a show, I mean, it's like such a big deal.
Right.
So
and you have to be pretty vulnerable. I mean, it seems like, I mean, at the performances, there's about how many in attendance? I mean, aside from even, you know, outside visitors from the community.
Yeah, we always have around 150 for the shows.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's their peers on the inside, incarcerated peers, and then also about 35 guests we ask from the outside too. So taking big risks and just like putting themselves out there, and like that's why we've taken so much time on the inside to like help them prepare for that, whether it's like having extra sessions or having them like really think about like, well, why did that work and why didn't that work mm-hmm. at this time, and thinking about all of those things too.
Yeah, well, that's also great that it sounds like you have a community connection, even if they're not really doing work, you know, around prison per se, but that you do have some of the local comedians or even some national ones who are willing to come in. What does that look like, or how does that work? Like, what are those discussions like when you're like, oh, can you come in and do this? And
well, it's been really great because all of the comedians in Portland have been awesome, and they've been able to come in and share their work, and have been really great afterwards too. And like mm-hmm. The last person that we've had, Mohamed Ilshiki,
mm-hmm.
he's a local Portland comedian, and he came in 3 times to help like develop the work for the next show, and then also performed at the show too.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've been able to get Hari Kondobulu to come in too, to do like a master class and he did it for 2 days and like worked on, and this was before the show in September, and so that was pretty awesome. And mm-hmm. like they were asking really good questions about like just even small things of just like how do you hold the mic right, and like just these kind of like small but important things when you're like there's a spotlight on you and it's just like you on stage trying to make people laugh, right? We've also had like Fred Armisen come too. He came a couple of times, one to talk about his work, and the other time he did like a sketch comedy workshop and refining the skits that they were working on too. Mm-hmm. So it's been pretty amazing and generous of all the people that have been involved.
I mean, it sounds to me as well that y'all have done some excellent networking too, and also I would also say that in a short period of time, it seems like that in that short period you've already brought in all these people to do this.
I think I used my like in my trying to like get people to come in using my New York City hustle, because like I would just keep on going to all of these local comedy shows
because mm-hmm.
there's so much good comedy in Portland, and then just talking to the comedians and seeing if they were available to come in, and like everybody was just so like, okay, yeah,
right,
you're doing
persistence
maybe
right. So one thing I did want to ask was so it sounds like what I hear you saying, your experience in New York, that you hadn't visited any prisons necessarily.
Correct.
Or had certain knowledge of prisons, and then you moved here, started going inside, learning more, teaching more, I mean, everything more, doing more art and everything. And you also have some great projects too, around, you know, gentrification in different cultural communities in Portland. And so where's your thinking, you know, I mean, as far as kind of where that's transformed about, I mean, not just doing this work, but about kind of, you know, what you see now that you've been going inside about the prisons, or how that kind of fits in with your kind of take on society now?
Oh, sure. You know, it's been pretty amazing to be able to, like, work with such interesting and talented people on the inside, who are very committed and in their craft, and just knowing, like, when they get on the outside, I've, like, talked to so many of the guys that have been released, and they've really, I mean, I don't want to, like, speak too, like, much about it, but they've been very appreciative about the experience. Mm-hmm. And so, and I'm still in contact with them and thinking that, like, and it's not the reason I'm, like, interested in doing this kind of work, like, but just how it's had an impact, but it's also, like, I've been severely impacted on, mm-hmm. like, in my creative process and just, mm-hmm. like, being a human in society and just, like, how to really unpack and creating spaces to unpack very complex things and experiences and situations. And I feel very, very lucky to be able to have, like, had this experience at all. So, yeah, I mean, Portland's been very good to me in general.
Yeah, so for people who are local and then maybe speak to people who aren't local because this show also broadcasts nationally. Mm-hmm. So, again, maybe give the web link and how people might get involved with either the program inside and or the academic program as it relates.
This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.